Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast.
We have allowed ourselves to become so disconnected and ignorant about something that is as intimate as the food that we eat.
Be prepared to grow your own for victory.
God said I need somebody strong enough to clear trees and heave bales, yet gentle enough to yean lambs and wean pigs and tend the pink foamed pullets who will stop his mower for an hour to splint the broken leg of a meadowlark. So God made a farmer.
Hello and welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast. I'm your host, Harold Thornbrough, and glad you're joining me today. We got a good one for you today, guys. Have you ever thought about homesteading with a tiny house, but just don't know where to begin? Or is it even something that's right for you? You know, the question I had is homesteading while living in a tiny house even practical? Well, on today's podcast episode, I have a conversation with Ryan Mitchell from thetinylife.com, and he answers questions like these and others. So stay tuned for that. This is episode 104, August 24th, 2018. And today we are talking about tiny house homesteading. Guys, it has been a crazy, crazy week around here. Man, I tell you, this is not only the busiest time of the year on the homestead. I mean, with the harvesting and the preserving and all the things you have to do, it's also the busiest time of the year at my day job. So it's like really long hours, working Saturdays even. Don't have the, you know, when you don't even have the whole weekend to try to do a week's worth of work, it's tough, you know. And boy, I'll tell you. And you know, it's not even, I always take that extra step even, and I do a lot of seed saving. So it's harvesting, you know, it's preserving. So you're doing a lot of canning, a lot of freezing, a lot of things you're doing there, you know, preparing your food for the winter. And then I'm, you know, digging in late at night trying to save seeds out of things. I've got a little table set up on my back deck, and, you know, I've got stuff set up everywhere trying to save a lot of seeds. You know, I've cut the tops off all the sprouting lettuce, and I've got all that sitting out there, and we're trying to get the seeds out of that. And we got beans, pile of dried up beans and peas, and, you know, just all the things that we're trying to save the seeds from. We got some tomatoes, we've got some cucumbers, we've got all kinds of stuff sitting out there. We're trying to get the seeds out of that, and, you know, that takes some time, and dry those out, and just a lot going on, you know. And like I said, my day job is just crazy right now, but I want to get these episodes out to you. We've got some great stuff, great interviews. We've got a lot of great questions that folks have been sending in, but I've been really looking forward to today's show with this interview with Ryan. Ryan Mitchell blogs over at thetinylife.com. He's got a great website. You got to go check that out. And he's an author of several books. Really great information there if you've ever been interested in tiny house building. But we're just going to jump right into this conversation with Ryan. I think you're really going to like it today. Well, Ryan, welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, now, I've been to your blog, The Tiny Life. I really like it. And you know, when I say that, I really mean it. I look at a lot of blogs, websites, and I'll tell you what, that's a good-looking website you got there. It really is.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Now, when it comes to tiny living, I often wonder, how does someone arrive there? How did Ryan become the tiny house guy? How did you end up where you're at?
Yeah. So for me, it kind of all started back when the recession kicked off in 2008. And I was fresh out of graduate school in my first adult job. And I remember very vividly the day that the owner of the company walked into kind of the main floor that we had there. And he said, guys, I have some bad news. Today is the last day. We're closing the company. You're all out of a job. Mm. And that just hit like a ton of bricks, obviously. I mean, not only because I lost my job, but it was like, you know, my first job 6 months out. And it, you know, all the rumblings of the recession that we had kind of heard about kind of came into real life very quickly. Mm-hmm. And it was also kind of a wake-up moment for me because, I was kind of taught or given the impression that, you go to school, you do a good job, you get good grades, you get your degree, then you go out and you find a job. And as long as you work hard and you do good work, then you should have job security. Mm-hmm. And here I was, not even 6 months into this, and realizing that that wasn't necessarily the case, or at least it wasn't the reality of my generation.
Right.
And a lot of people can kind of, you can go two ways with that, right? You can be pessimistic, you can be down, you can be negative about it. But for me, I kind of like bucked up and I was just like, I never want to be in this position again. And so I did a lot of thinking about my life. And being that I was at the beginning of my career, I knew that was the time to make any changes that I wanted to. So through a lot of reflection and thinking, I ended up saying, maybe I want to go a different career path or a different way of working, kind of. And we can get into that a little bit later. But one of the things was I looked at my budget and I saw housing was one of my largest costs mm-hmm. every single month. About half my income went to rent, utilities, insurance, things like that. And I said, crazy question, how could I just get rid of this line item? And I had no idea how I was going to do it at that point. But I knew if I was able to do it, I could basically regain half my income every single month, which would be huge. Everyone would love that.
Oh, yeah.
So what I ended up doing is taking some time and thinking about it, and I stumbled across this concept of tiny houses. This was, again, like 2008. So almost no one was doing it. There certainly weren't websites about it. There weren't instructions or books or courses or YouTube videos, really. And I kind of latched on to the idea, and that kind of started my journey of actually going on and building a tiny house, and now I've been living it for over 5 years off the grid. And eventually left my corporate job to be self-employed and a whole bunch of other things in that journey.
So you did build your tiny house yourself?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, wow. Well, yeah, that's, and it kind of leads me to the question because, I watch some TV. And what I always see on TV is these tiny houses that cost more than my regular house. So Now I'm assuming that wasn't the case with you building it yourself, but can you save a lot of money building a tiny house? I mean, when I see it on TV, it's completely the opposite.
Yeah. Tiny houses, in my mind, only work financially if you build it yourself, mm-hmm. or at least the majority of it. Because whether it's a tiny house or a traditional home, 50 to 60% of the embodied cost of a home is labor. And, I was at the point, fresh out of college, still had student loans, I had a car payment, all that kind of stuff. And I needed to save as much money as I could. I needed to do it as inexpensively as I could. And, I wanted to have a nice home. It didn't need to be super fancy, but I also didn't want it to be just bottom of the barrel kind of stuff either, mm-hmm. because it was my house that I was going to live in for at least the foreseeable future. So, it was very clear to me that I need to build it myself, and you can save a lot on it. So I think it's the way to approach it, if you ask me.
Yeah, because when I see that, and that's something that's always just been kind of as fascinating as the lifestyle is to me of tiny living, the minimalistic mm-hmm. lifestyle, all that. I would see those things, you see that on TV and you just go, wow, that just seems crazy to me. And you've seen it. They're going for $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 on there. And you're crazy. But, I agree with you. You pretty much have to do it in a way that saves you a lot of money to do it. Now, why a tiny house versus an RV or camper or something like that?
Yeah. So I think initially for me, it was the aesthetics,
mm-hmm.
A camper RV. I don't particularly, I don't mind the look, but it's also, it's not a house in my mind.
Right.
And a tiny house is, very much the stereotypical house shape and look and feel.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, tiny houses are built like a home. They operate like a home. Whereas campers and RVs are technically seasonal vehicles. You know, they're recreational vehicles. They aren't intended to be year-round living. Now, there's certainly people that do, and they do it just fine. But, you know, it's not apples to apples there. You know, right. The walls of my tiny house are like R20. Mm-hmm. You may get an R6 in a good camper or RV. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's just like thermally, it's not going to perform the same. Aesthetically, it's not going to look the same. And then functionally, with like HVAC and all that kind of stuff, it just it has a lot of advantages over RV and camp.
Well, I know even in a lot of campgrounds and stuff, folks are going to those park model homes more than traditional campers and stuff, just because, like you say, the looks of it. You know, people just want it to look like a home. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of that even around where I live here. Well, so you decided that you wanted to save money and build you a tiny home. How did you go about that? I mean, how did you decide where you were going to put it, what kind you were going to build? I mean, you did all this yourself. Did you have a lot to learn? Did you already know a lot about construction, or what got you down this path here?
Yeah, so I knew nothing about any of it.
Wow.
It was the worst, like, it was the most ill-conceived notion at the beginning. You know, I took an eighth grade shop class where I built like a bat box. Okay.
a little bit of difference. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, I used tools for a very short amount of time, but that was when I was in eighth grade. You know, at this point I was 23 or 24. So it'd been like over a decade. So yeah, I didn't really have a lot of experience with building or construction or home building, anything like that. But it was something that, I just knew the wins were going to be so big. So it was worth it for me to struggle through it and learn and take the time and put in the energy to do it. So what I did is basically I talked to some people who had actually built them. I got as many books as I could on traditional home building and just researched it. And then every single week, what I would do is I'd figure out what I was going to do that weekend. And then I would research Monday through Thursday, every single night that I would come home, on like how to do the things. So if it was like how to put in a window, I learned how to flash it and how to, you know, nail the fins and all this kind of stuff. And then on Thursday night, I would make a shopping list. And then Friday night, I would go after work and I would purchase what I need for the weekend and then drop it off at my location that I was building at. And then Saturday morning, I just woke up early and I would build all weekend. So I built all weekend, most weekends, for about a year and a half. And there was a one point that I was waiting about 3 months on a window because it was a custom made window and they messed it up. And then I had to wait another month for them to come back. So there was some downtime in that year and a half, but on the calendar, it was about a year and a half of just a lot of hard work, a lot of research, and some trial and error, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like you were committed, though, to put that long of a time into putting it together.
Yeah, well, you know, when I bought the trailer, I was like, well, I just dropped $2,500 on this trailer. You know, like, I'm committed, right? You know, like, I was all in at that point. And, you know, it was one of those unique times, I think, in life where I was building a future for myself. You know, like, you go to school and those things are good, but they're not tangible like me actually building a home.
Right.
So there was something really special about that process. And then, you know, there was a lot of excitement for me and just like, you know, people were getting interested in tiny houses. So I was able to share my story on the tinylife.com, which is the website.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, more and more people started showing up to the website to share in my journey with me. And so that was a really fun part of it also. So yeah, I mean, one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life, also one of the more meaningful things.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's nothing better than, you know, just building something with your own hands. And then, especially something as, you know, is a big part of your life as your home, you know, for sure.
Yeah.
Now, let me just ask you, I'm going to ask you how much you paid for your home or what it cost you to build your home, but what can a person reasonably, you know, be looking at to build a tiny home if they're going to build it themselves?
Yeah. So if you build it yourself, basically the least you're going to spend if you just go all new materials is $10,000. Mm-hmm. And that's for, you know, budget economy versions of everything. So sure. Vinyl flooring, off the shelf windows, you know, maybe cheap siding, mm-hmm. asphalt shingle roofs and things like that. And then you can go up from there. I mean, obviously the sky's the limit, but most people, when they build them themselves, usually end up landing around $30,000 for a self-built tiny house. And
what size of homes are these generally?
It's usually between 150 and 300 square feet.
Okay.
So obviously, like, the larger the home, the more money it's going to cost, mm-hmm. unless you go budget, you know, that kind of thing. But for my tiny house, it was about $35,000. For all the materials and things like that. And mine was, you know, used some pretty nice materials. And then I also saved up and I was able to basically get a solar panel system, which if the first like kind of chunk that I did was around $14,000 that I spent on that. And then I later put another $6,000 into it for some more panels and batteries. But yes. So all told, you know, it was about 34,000, I think, was the final number for me personally.
But you're completely off the grid. I mean, you're running just your solar panels, electricity, and.
Yeah. So, I have city water. That's the one thing. I have a lake or like a large pond. I don't know where pond ends and lake begins, but, so basically this large pond that I could have, actually, you know, done filtering from and all this kind of stuff. And, and it technically was possible. And I kind of actually figured it out, priced it out and everything. But at the end of the day, I was like, you know what? There's a city water line right there and it's going to cost me about the same amount.
Sure.
And I have to run the pipe anyway. So I am connected to the city water. But my power, I'm not connected to any grid at all. So I get all my power from my solar panels and then I use a composting toilet. Instead of like a sewer line, and then my gray water goes out through a pipe into a gray water system.
Okay. Now, did you purchase land to set this on, or did you put it like on some rented land, or how did you do that?
Yeah. So, where I'm living now is actually a friend's land, and basically I just barter with him. But recently I just purchased just over 11 and a half acres in the mountains, for me to eventually move on to. So I really like living in the city, but now I also have this mountain land that I can live on too. And one nice thing about the tiny house is if I ever don't want to live in the city anymore, I just roll my tiny house up to the mountain land and set up camp there. And I'm good to go. That wouldn't even take a day to move all my house and everything to set up.
Now, yeah, let me ask you about that. How realistic is it moving these things? I mean, you're not driving down the road at full speed or anything. It's a pretty heavy house, right?
Yeah, my house is 6,500 pounds.
Okay.
So, and it's 19 feet long.
Okay.
So it's movable, you can, it's definitely movable. And, you know, for like truckers, that's a small load.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to make sure you have the right truck to pull it with.
Yeah.
I mean, I've moved it once and it was not difficult at all.
Okay.
I'm not going to do it every single weekend, but you know, when I need to, I can do it without much hesitation.
I hear sometimes these people talk about building a tiny home and then pulling it across the country. And I'm like, I don't know about that.
Yeah. No, get yourself a camper or something like that.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, I have friends that do that. They've driven tens of thousands of miles at this point, and they get like 5 miles per gallon.
Yeah.
So they literally keep a part-time job just to pay for gas. No thanks.
Yeah, no kidding. So, okay, here's the – we're kind of wrap this up, bring it to the question that I want us to focus on for a few minutes here, and that is how does tiny house living – and homesteading go together? Because it's always been a struggle of mine to look at the tiny lifestyle, not minimalism necessarily, but having small space, in the sense that, you know, part of homesteading for me is self-sufficiency and sustainability. You know, I can a lot of food. I mean, I live in a, you know, 3-bedroom home and we have trouble finding places to put all the stuff. you know, that were canning and having for, you know, to have a self-sufficient life to some extent. So I guess my question is this, do you sacrifice, a little bit of self-sufficiency for that small living lifestyle?
Yeah. So that's a good question. So what I would kind of say is basically that it's all about designing the life that you want and figuring out how to make it happen. So, you know, for me, when I first started this, the big motivator was economic, right? I wanted to regain a lot of my income. I wanted to pay down any debts I had, get out of my student loans, things like that. Mm-hmm. And then I was in a lot better position to start my own business, which was a big kind of motivator of mine. So I was able to do that. And then I eventually built a new company and then sold it. And that kind of gave me the capital to purchase this land. So, you know, every single step of the way, it's been a very intentional choice of me asking myself, okay, what is the life that I want to build? Mm-hmm. And when people look at tiny houses, they often say, well, you know, I could never do that or whatever the thing is. But the truth is that my tiny house is just a tool. It's a tool that allowed me to get out of debt. It's a tool that allowed me to save money to then make the leap to self-employment, to sell a company and then purchase land, which was a childhood dream of mine, to own dirt underneath my shoe. And that was, you know, the long range goal, and the fact that I was able to pull all that off by the age of 34 is something that like none of my peers are even close to doing.
Right.
And I'm really grateful for. And on addition to that, like I've written books, I've traveled for many months around the world and things like that. So it's been a lot of use for me. So when it comes to kind of getting back to here to the homesteading, I think it just needs to start with whether it's just you or a conversation with your family or your spouse or whatever the case is, what is the life you want to build and what does that look like? And also know that tiny houses, at least for me, is a stepping stone. It isn't my forever home. It certainly could be if it's still right for me 10, 15, 20 years later. But chances are, you know, when I get married or whatever the case may be, you know, it's going to have its final day, and it's just something that I'll either rent out as an Airbnb, it may be like a second home somewhere, whatever the case is. But it served its purpose all along the way.
Yeah.
And the second that it doesn't serve that purpose, then it's time to move on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I noticed, you know, that you write about that, of course. I mean, on your website, you have three main categories. You have the tiny house, and then you have minimalism, and then and homesteading. And I was just kind of wondering how you tied all that together. And I see what you're saying, that, you know, it's getting you to the homesteading point. And, you know, ultimately, I asked that question with inside my own head having a little bit of the answer that I would give, and that's that, you know, that's your house. You know,
right.
It doesn't mean you can't have a property with buildings, you know, a barn and other things on that property as well. Just, you know, it's not just about the tiny house itself. That's where you sleep and spend a little bit of time. But, you know, like me, I spend most of my time outside anyway. So, you know, I mean, it doesn't have to be your entire life inside that house is what I'm getting, I guess. So, you know, I see it as being a stepping stone. I think that's great how you're looking at it. And I think for a lot of young people, or people just starting out in life, it could be a really good option if done right, like you did, and, you know, enable them to have some things in life or to get to some places in life quicker than what they would otherwise be there. And, yeah, I absolutely see in that being something that could happen with tiny living, minimalistic living, because we're so materialistic, as a people. That, you know, it just, people just want their stuff, you know, and in the end, I'm mid 40s and, I see pretty clearly now what I didn't see, you know, 20 years ago. And that's that stuff really isn't all that important, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I get what you're saying there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think with tiny houses, it did give me that perspective of, okay, what is really important? And I mean, I knew some of it, but then I think it really reaffirmed in my mind and cemented my, you know, my, my resolve in it of what really was important. And, you know, for me, that's relationships and, you know, having creative outlets and things like that. And then kind of working after these goals and dreams I had. So, yeah, I mean, however you need to get it done, you get it done, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So now you've seen that kind of spread into your entire life, though, this minimalistic, I guess, idea. I mean, you've taken it beyond just a tiny house, haven't you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny. Like, I never pegged myself really as a minimalist. Mm-hmm. But then someone said to me, you know, Ryan, you've been living in a tiny house for 3 years. Like, you can't say you're not a minimalist. You know, it's just like they're not mutually exclusive.
Well,
like,
in the end, you can't have very much stuff because you don't have a lot of room to put it, right?
Right, yeah. So I was kind of able to figure out exactly what I needed and what I didn't in that process.
Yeah, yeah. And you feel like that was part of what it had to be part of what enabled you to have that little bit of a freedom to be able to do these other things and get you there quicker also. I mean, the tiny house led to these other things, which contributed to that as well, right?
Yeah, because once I built the tiny house, basically the ROI, the return on investment mm-hmm. for me, or the, you know, time to recoup the cost was basically 2 years, because I looked at it and figuring out what I was spending on rent and all that kind of stuff. Basically, if I lived in my tiny house for 2 years, that I would have broken even if I had just been renting. And so every single day I stay in my tiny house past that 2 year mark, which I've been in over 5 now, then it's just money in the bank that is resources that I can spend elsewhere, like developing this land. So, you know, future plans here are actually to put like a metal building shop so that I have some larger spaces to do, you know, homesteading type of stuff, because you can only fit so many canned jars of applesauce or tomatoes right. in a tiny house.
Yeah, right. Now you're developing this land. Does it already have a well and septic systems and things like that? Or are you planning on having to do all that?
Yeah. So at this point, the only thing it has is a 2.5 acre cleared piece of pasture, basically, mm-hmm. and then power to the site. And okay. it's so yeah. Coming up here, we're going to be putting in a well and septic, and then I'll be building this metal shop to kind of give me some more space.
Okay, yeah, that's great. Well, then you're really going to be able to live out the homesteading part of your plan here now that you have that land. So that sounds like a perfect setup.
Yeah, and you know, the tiny house too, what's nice about it is you can, let's say, you know, a lot of people are in this boat, is they save up to buy land, and they buy the land because it's their dream. You know, with a tiny house, if you could just roll that tiny house up in there, spend the next year, maybe two, saving up for whatever's next, maybe, you know, to build your big house or whatever the thing is. But you're on the land, you're working the land, you're also understanding how the things flow in the land, you know, when it rains, where the water goes, where the sun comes in,
sure. yeah.
where, you know, the cold spots are, where the hot spots are, things like that. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to being able to actually like be on the land and just experience it, so that I can make more informed decisions of like, okay, this is where the orchard's going to go. This is where I want to run my chickens. This is, you know, these different things.
Yeah, that sounds like a real good plan. Yeah, there's something to be said about being on the land and experiencing your property, you know, because you can look from a distance all day long and you're just not going to know everything about it. But you get on there and feel it out, it'll teach you a lot about what you got going on there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it looks to me like from your website, you've written some books, so you've taken some steps to help others kind of go down this path as well, teaching them how to, you know, basically build a tiny home, right?
Yeah, so I have a couple books. And kind of how the whole website started was, when I began, no one was talking about it. There wasn't a lot of resources out there for people. So I had to struggle through it and figure out on my own how to build this thing. And I wanted to basically be helpful to others. And that's kind of how the website started, was just sharing my story and my knowledge. And then eventually that led to books and a conference and all sorts of other ventures mm-hmm. to kind of help people do that. So we have 6 ebooks, 2 print books through a traditional publisher, And then I have two self-published books as well.
Okay, wow. Now, I see just the titles I see on your main page of your website. It looks like you're dealing specifically with building the house. But you also talk about the codes and things like that, and I think that would be a really important one for some folks.
Yeah, codes are the Achilles heel of tiny houses. And just to be like 100%, transparent with folks, like my tiny house is built to code, but is not inspected. Therefore, it is technically illegal.
Yeah.
So at any point, the county could roll up to my house and slap a sticker on the door saying it's condemned and that I can't live there anymore. Fortunate for me, I can just move,
Right.
And I can do so in a day.
And that probably varies from state to state on how they do that too. Probably county to county, a matter of fact. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. It's county to county. And that's what is tricky about giving advice with building codes is there's over 3,300 municipal counties in the United States. Each one of them is different. Each one of them changes every single year. So what's true in one spot isn't true in the other.
And you got a house that can be moved to one of those other counties at any point.
Yeah. I mean, I have friends who, their house is technically illegal, and the way that the permitting and all the citations and things like that, it's by parcel address. Mm-hmm. And you're allowed to, to camp on one parcel for 30 days. And what they did is they just bought a lot with two parcels on it, and the inspector would come out and say, you can't be camping here for more than 30 days. And they say, cool. They hook up their truck and they drive it like 10 feet across the parcel line.
Oh, wow.
And they're now on a new parcel. And then 30 days later, the guy comes out and they back it up 10 feet across that line, and eventually they leave them alone. So like, he's not breaking the law. So
yeah, if they ever wanted to push it, I'm sure they change some law somehow.
I mean, and,
absolutely. I mean, that's the kind of stuff they usually do. But yeah, I could see, you do what you can while you can, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and then hopefully while you're, this is all happening, you're like getting buddy-buddy with the inspector. Right. And, the thing is like the building inspectors, they actually really like tiny houses because they're realistic when it comes to housing in America, especially in cities, because density is growing and we need a way to do what's basically called urban infill. So how can we take, let's say a city is 50,000, I don't know, or 10,000 square miles. I don't know what a normal city square mileage is, but whatever that number is, they're trying to figure out ways to up density. And in some cases, they're trying to figure out how can we double the number of people that we fit into these urban spaces. And tiny houses are a really great way for you to roll a tiny house into someone's backyard, and you basically just double the occupancy on that lot. So, building inspectors know this, and they see this as a coming problem, especially in urban scenarios. So they're embracing it. It's just, sometimes their hands are tied with the way the building codes are, but we've made strides in that regard. We were just, it was about a year ago, we're accepted into the International Residential Code, which is basically the governing body that kind of trickles down to every single major city and town in the United States. So we're now, tiny houses are officially named in the appendix, and it's just a matter of adoption for each city. So.
Yeah.
There's steps being made there.
It seems to me that, and I heard a lot of discussion about this in the past, that one of the benefits, so to speak, of tiny houses was the mobility and being on wheels made it, to where you didn't have to pay property taxes a lot of people would talk about it. In some places that was the case, that you could park that thing on somebody's property and get out of the property taxes. Is that still the case, or have they done a lot of laws to change that?
Yeah, so the kind of the way it's dealt with is I pay property tax on the actual trailer. So there are taxes being paid, and
it's not considered a home at that point for the taxes.
Right. So, yeah, it's considered a trailer, so it's taxed like a trailer, and there's ways that they reassess it for a higher value. But with the adoption, basically that's kind of the deal, right? Is cities give you a legal leg or legal right to live in these things. But then what they get out of the deal is, well, now we get to tax you. So It goes both ways.
Yeah.
And it's just, we'll get there eventually.
I figured that was probably the case, that they would try to change that, because it seemed to me that was the reason a lot of people were going the tiny house way for a long time, was just to kind of get around some of the, you know, the legalities of paying a lot of taxes and things. But, you know, I still think it's, I find it fascinating. Me and my wife, we watched the tiny house, TV shows, you know, all the time. And I remember there was one on Netflix here a couple of years ago that we really enjoyed, a young man building one. And it just, we've seen a lot of, you know, stuff, and it's always been fascinating to us. It's never been realistic for us. I mean, we had three daughters and things like that, so it was never something we was going to pursue, but always been somewhat fascinated by it. And, you know, my daughters are in their 20s now. And I, you know, I've often thought, I think it'd be pretty cool if, they kind of went up down a path like that to, like you did, to save money and set themselves up, you know, for getting what they want out of life a little quicker. So I do think it's fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, especially with my generation, you know, employment, like a traditional employment option, you don't work for a company for, you know, your whole life, or even in some cases, even 10 years, right? In fact, now it's more the case that they're not even hiring people as employees. They're trying to do everyone as contractors.
Yeah, right.
So the reality of what many millennials face when it comes to employment is, you know, I may be really good at my job, but it could be that I'm here for 2 or 3 years, and then I have to move 4 states over for 2 or 3 years, and then I have to move, you know, in a different direction for 2 or 3 years. And, you know, if you're able to just take your house and move with it, that could be a huge win. And then you're also reducing your living costs by a lot, so that maybe you can put down 50% on a home instead of, you know, 5 or 10%, or even now I hear people are able to get zero down on a home. So, you know, you can just make your financial picture much better when you're a younger person, and just the realities of the world we're living in kind of almost necessitate it in some cases.
Sure.
But I did want to mention one thing is, like, even though I am a proponent of tiny houses, I don't think it's for everyone. In fact, I think it's probably for a small minority of people. What I think that tiny houses hopefully offer to the broader country or world or your listeners is just like, okay, there's alternatives out there. And I think homesteaders get that, right? Like, we, instead of getting fast food every single day, we're growing tomatoes. Instead of, you know, buying stuff that's flown in from Brazil, we're eating with the seasons, things like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think the larger impact will be just, you know, getting people to open their eyes to different options, and then asking those questions of, like, what's right for me?
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. Okay, so let's just say someone's listening to this and they're saying, I love this. This is the way I want to go. You know, I'm just starting off in life, or maybe I'm later in life, but, you know, I'm trying to get back on my feet, and I think this is a good way to go. What's their first steps? What are they, other than getting your books, which I would advise, what's the next steps they need to take to start heading down this path?
Yeah. So what I would say is probably the first step would be to try to get your finances in order. If they're not already, you know, get on a budget, work on any debts that you have, you know, paying them down. Dave Ramsey is a really good resource for that.
Really good.
Yeah. So, I always point people to that, because one of the things is that just because you move into a tiny house, like people think, like, you move into a tiny house and, like, this magic wand gets waved and all your life problems go away. And it's not true.
I love it that you're saying this. You know, I figured you were going to start off with just some step-by-step building ways to get started actually building something. But I love it that you're starting here. This is great.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the thing is, you're building a life, right? You're building a home in that process, but you're trying to build a life. And you're trying to build that the best life for yourself. And when it comes to that, I mean, money is the number one cause of divorce. It's a huge stress factor. It makes us really unhappy. And if you're able to, you know, I'm not saying become a minimalist and live in a sparse apartment or something like that, but I'm saying have a healthy relationship with your money, get out of debt so that you're paying everything with cash, or at least, you know, the majority of things, you're not carrying a balance on your credit card. If a $500 bill pops up, you're not scrambling, wondering where you're going to pay that from. And then from there, you know, ask those questions of like, you know, what do I want my life to be? What do I want more in my life of? What do I want less of in my life? And, you know, just do some thinking around that. And then at that point, I would say, ask yourself, now that you kind of have this picture of the life that you want, does tiny houses even fit into that? Because if the answer is no, then I don't want you in a tiny house. I want you to do what's right for you. And if the answer is, okay, a tiny house is the answer, or it is a stepping stone to what I want to do, then, you know, from there, what I would do is start downsizing your possessions. You don't have to live like a super sparse minimalist or anything like that. But, you know, Americans have a lot of stuff in their homes, and it's the reason why the self-storage industry is a booming industry. It's the fact that the average American family household carries $13,000 of credit card debt. It's why 76% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck. Mm-hmm. And it's also why that of the items that come into your house, 80% of them won't be used within 6 months. Yeah. So we just need to get a reorientation around how our relationship with stuff and material possessions. Having things isn't bad. Buying things isn't bad. It's just that we need to make sure we're doing it in a way that is helpful for us. And, you know, I've been living in 150 square feet for, you know, 5.5 years now. I still am trying to work on this myself. You know, this isn't like a destination. It's a journey. So this year I'm actually not buying anything other than food and like, you know, toiletries, toilet paper and that kind of stuff. You know, no, like just items. And the reason is because I realized that even though I didn't buy a lot, the things that I did buy weren't getting me closer to my goals. And if they're not getting closer to my goals, then they're getting in the way of them. So, that would be the next step for you is to just, kind of declutter, downsize a little bit. If you live, you know, in a large apartment, maybe the next year when you re-up your lease, try a smaller apartment and kind of go from there. And then from there, I would start thinking about what do you need a house to do for you? And this is where, like, for homesteading comes in. It could be that, like, I need a big kitchen, right? Mm-hmm. Because I got a can, you know.
Right.
Like, how many cans or jars of, you know, whatever do you typically can a year?
At least a couple hundred. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So the practicality is you need a certain size kitchen just to do that in. Uh-huh. And then you need a certain size pantry to put and store all that stuff in. And if that's the life that you want to build, then you need to design a house that meets that need. Uh-huh. And what's great about tiny houses is that we have the opportunity to do that. Most homes that we live in aren't built for us. They're built for a market segment. You know, it's the 3 bedrooms, 2.5 baths, or whatever the market is. You know, it's stainless steel appliances, granite countertops, these buzzwords that you see realtors put on their spec sheets. So when it comes to building your own home, it's really amazing that you get this chance to build something that is exactly right for you. You know, as a homesteader, think about what you need to do in your home, what the function needs to be, and then you come up with a design. And then from there, you know, there's a lot of technical bits. You can check out my website. There's a ton. Mm-hmm. There's 1,200 posts for free on my website, so you don't have to spend a dime. If you do want to grab a book, I have a really good book. It's called How to Build a Tiny House, and that's all the technical bits on it.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah. And, you know, you're talking about, you said a whole bunch of things there that kind of hit home for me, like having too much stuff for one thing. I mean, we have stuff we don't use, you know, we really do. And we've been talking a lot about getting rid of a lot of things, you know, because, well, we've lived in this house for 26 years, I think now. You just accumulate a lot of stuff, you know, and we have, and it's time to really declutter and get rid of some of that stuff. But, You know, and we even have a storage building with stuff in it, you know, that we rent every month. And I look at that and I go, wow, you know, that's stuff we're not even using. I mean, a lot of seasonal stuff, you know, something for winter or whatever, but still, you know, it's just more stuff. And, you know, and when you were talking about building, your tiny home and setting up for you, you know, so often even in these neighborhoods where everybody's getting a big home built, a lot of times the neighborhood dictates what kind of home you build, how big it is, how many bathrooms it has, how many square feet it is. And even our own, I don't know, we get this influence of thinking because we step into other people's homes and it may not be what we want. It's just that we look at other people's things and go, well, I want what they have, you know?
Right.
And it's a mindset thing that, yeah, I think, you know, homesteaders especially should try to get past that because we are trying to not live the normal life. You know, we're trying to live a life that looks unusual to people, you know, one that's, you know, more efficient, more self-sufficient. And, so I think a tiny home, definitely, designing a tiny home, building your tiny home could definitely fit into that, that mold.
Yeah. And I mean, a tiny home, I live in 150 square feet. There's no rules here. I mean, there's building codes, but other than that, there are no rules. So yeah. If a tiny home for you is 1,000 square feet, then it's 1,000 square feet. Call it a tiny home. Yeah. I don't care. You know, and practically you have a family. So that needs to be taken into consideration. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be living in 100, 200 square feet. It's just not practical, right?
We've seen people that do that with a family, and that's kind of amazing to me.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with the dirty little secret with all the shows that they have on it is about a third of them end up on up for sale, like a used tiny house sales thing very quickly. That.
I bet they don't get their money back out of some of them places either as much as they pay for them. No way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's some great advice. I think, yeah, what you're doing there is great for folks who are wanting to go down this path. I think, like I said, browsing around your website, man, it's a great website. You got some great information in there. You've done a great job on that. You got a few books for sale. I think people ought to get those if they're interested in pursuing that, because I think paying a few bucks for a book could definitely save you a lot of money down the road if you're going down this path. I bet you wish you'd have had some of your books back when you first started building your tiny home.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I have people, they come to my conference, and I charge $350 for the conference, and they say it's worth every penny because I know that's about $2,000 of mistakes that I won't make.
Right, exactly, so, exactly.
Good investment for most people.
Yeah, I could definitely see that being the case. Well, anything else you wanted to talk about before we wrap it up?
No, I mean, I think we hit most of what I was thinking about. You know, just kind of think about what's right for you and then figure out the life you want to lead and how your house can meet that need. Because at the end of the day, your house is there to serve you, not the other way around. And I think we've kind of gotten lost on that kind of relationship with our homes, right? It used to be, it was just a thing that empowered our lives to build a house. It wasn't just a house. It was to build a home, which meant family and relationships and memories and things like that. So
I've often said that many times about turning a home into a homestead is, you know, a home is kind of a taker, but a homestead is a giver. It's a provider. It's giving you something back, you know, but we build these homes today that they're just takers. I mean, it takes our resources. It takes our time. They take, you know, whatever we have. It just sucks it out of us rather than being a provider for us. And your home should be serving you and not the other way around. So
well said.
Yeah. So, well, I sure do appreciate you coming on the podcast today. Can you just throw out your information there about where folks can find out more about you and what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can check me out at thetinylife.com, and I'm on Twitter at Ryan T. Mitchell, and Facebook at The Tiny Life as well.
That's awesome. Well, thanks again, Ryan, for coming on. It's great, great, great information today, and I think some folks will really get a lot out of it, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, that was a great interview with Ryan. I hope you enjoyed that. I love how practical he is about that. You know, it isn't something he's trying to say this is for everybody. He's not dogmatic about it, saying everybody should do this. Matter of fact, he says very few people should be doing this. But for those who are interested in pursuing tiny house homesteading, what great advice Ryan gives for that, following that, what he says there at the end, you know, about just really evaluating your situation, getting out of debt, doing all those things first before you ever, you know, drive the first nail into a piece of wood building a home. So, and that's just great advice, you know, across the board. Really, you know, even if you're not looking at tiny houses, just really evaluate what you want out of life before you start chasing it. You know, I mean, because so many pursue the homesteading lifestyle, not really knowing exactly what they want. What they really want is just some freedom in their life. And, you know, that can look like a lot of different things. So just, you know, really evaluate what you want out of life before you start pursuing it. And then pursue it with all your heart, with all your passion, just like Ryan did. So I did want to tell you something. Ryan afterwards sent me an email, and he really wanted to tell you about something that he's worked on. And I'm going to tell you what, I went and checked this out. And you want to go look at this. It's the complete solar oven guide he has put together. It looks like a great resource for anyone considering purchasing or building a solar oven. He's done all the hard work for you. You know, if you're wondering which one to pick, he's got that all like laid out. What are you looking for in a solar oven? Go check out the complete solar oven guide. Great resource. Obviously something he's kind of passionate about is cooking with a solar oven, and he has put a lot of work into this guide, so go check it out. And if you've thought about building your own solar oven, he's got some plans in there you can get as well. So go check that out. I do think that's a great resource. That is in the recommendation section of today's show notes. So the show notes today are at smalltownhomestead.com/104. And also I got links in there to Ryan's website, his Facebook page, his Twitter handle. Also, there's a link in there for Dave Ramsey's How to Get Out of Debt Using a Debt Snowball System. You can check that out if that's something you're interested in. And some links to some of Ryan's books. So go and check all the ad out. Great interview. Thanks for coming on the show today, Ryan, and all the great information that you offered the listeners. This podcast is made possible by those who join our Homestead Forum membership community. To learn more about the benefits of membership, just go to thehomesteadforum.com. Check all that out. And I really appreciate you guys joining me today. And until the next episode, happy homesteading. And God bless.
Thanks for listening. To see the show notes for this podcast or listen to other podcast episodes, go to smalltownhomestead.com. There you can also read our blog, connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, and take advantage of the many resources we make available to help you along in your homesteading journey. Please share this podcast and help us to carry out our mission of helping others to homestead today for a better tomorrow. We'll be right back.